Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 172. In the last lesson, we were in Deuteronomy 33, where Moses was mentioning the fact that at the end time, God is going to judge Edom among all the other nations, and we read many of the scriptures, and God is going to bring his judgment upon all mankind, and he specifies certain ones that he is targeting, in essence, for destruction. In the case of Edom, it's going to be utter destruction. There are several scriptures that refer to that. And obviously, he's going to leave some of them, as we read earlier, widows and orphans. But the majority of the house of Esau is going to be obliterated, at least in this lifetime. How many are going to be left behind, we don't know exactly. And apparently, the ones that will be targeted the most will be obviously the men of war. And in Deuteronomy chapter 33, this is what Moses was saying about the end time. And let's read it again, because we want to link it to another fact here. Verse 1, we read, "Now this is the blessing with which Moses, the man of God, blessed the children of Israel before his death." And he said, and when you read the entirety of the chapter, you realize that he's speaking about the blessings that were given to the tribes of Israel. A part of them were fulfilled in the land of Canaan. But obviously, as Jacob made it very plain, as the Holy Spirit inspired him to make it very plain also, that the majority of these blessings that he was passing on to them were going to be in the end time. And it is later on, in later times, many, many centuries down the road, when the children of Israel, after they were taken into captivity, and after that the people of Judah, that they ended up in the lands that God had given them, and you find them there to this very day. And so in specific, Moses is speaking about the day of the Lord here, the time when God himself shall rise to smite the earth. And so in verse 2, he said, "The Lord came from Sinai," and that's, as we mentioned earlier, this is what happened when he took Israel to him as his own people, his own wife. But he's speaking about the future, obviously. "The Lord came from Sinai and dawned on them from Seir." And the question was, why mention Seir here? What's the connection between Seir and Sinai? Obviously, he's speaking about the future, a future event. "And he shone forth from Mount Paran. And he came with 10,000s of his saints," and all that. It's obviously at the end of time, the day of the Lord. "And from his right hand came a fiery law for them." And as we mentioned, Jude is also mentioning this very fact when he's prophesying in verse 14 in his letter that Enoch, the 10th from Adam, prophesied, was the 10th, probably 8th or 7th, whatever, he prophesied of the coming of the Lord with the 10,000 of his saints. So this is an ancient prophecy that Moses is referring to here, knowledge that has been passed on from generation to generation about the end time. So apparently, even from the beginning of time, God has already inspired his servants to declare the events that will happen at the end time, and there must have been an awful lot of knowledge and understanding there from the beginning of the story. What will the end be? And so again, you know, we want to know, why is Moses mentioning here Seir and Paran? And as we mentioned in last lesson, the people of Edom were in that territory, not only in Mount Seir, but also further down into the wilderness of Paran. And that was in ancient time, obviously. They're not there anymore in those territories. They moved elsewhere. But later on in the days of King Solomon, we read again about this wilderness of Paran, that's beside Mount Seir, what happened in the days of King David. He subjugated Edom, and Edom by then already migrated. Most of Edom by then were already migrated to many other areas, but the people that remained behind there, and obviously when they remained behind, they constantly got into trouble with the people of Judah. And at one point, Joab went over there and just made battle with them and destroyed all their males, as we can read it in 2 Kings. And so later on in the days of King Solomon, they fled. One of them that God raised against Solomon fled into this territory. So let's read a little bit about that. First, let's go to 1 Kings and see what Joab did, because there were other implications to what happened at this point when Joab went to battle against Edom, who were at the time in Mount Seir, and also they were in other territories. He, in essence, chased them away from there, and many of them went all the way down to the Red Sea. That is later on to be called the Red Sea, because they were the Red people, that is, the Edomites, and so, and that's how the name was given to the sea, the Red Sea. Originally, it used to be the Reed Sea, and then later on was called the Red Sea because of the people of Edom, who are, and Edom in Hebrew means red, dwelt in that area. And that was all along the coast of Saudi Arabia. And as we mentioned earlier, the capital, one of their capitals there, was Medina. Today it is in Saudi Arabia. But anciently, this whole territory along the coast was an Edomite country. And one of the reasons they were over there also, because as they multiplied, there were many of them, and they had constant war with Judah. They could never conquer the land, obviously. And so they began spreading in that direction. And sometimes they were just chased, you know, all the way down there, those who remained behind anyway, by different kings of Judah. And in this case, we read about Joab and what he did to them. And I think we read it earlier. Let's go to 1 Kings chapter 11 and see what Joab did here. 1 Kings 11 and verse 14. We read here about Solomon. Solomon was a righteous king, and then at the end of his life he turned to idolatry. He had many women, and some of them were also Edomites and other native women. And of course, all the kings of the earth that came from all over the place, you know, that was a custom of the time to bring their daughters to the king, and that was one of the reasons why he had so many wives also. And so we read in verse 14, "Now the Lord raised up an adversary against Solomon." And mind you, as we mentioned earlier several times, many of the people that were around the people of Judah and Israel were basically relatives. On the east bank you find Ammon and Moab, and they are the children of Lot, who was a nephew of Abraham. And then you find Edom right below them, who was a brother of Jacob. And so God used these nations, and also Amalek, who was a grandson of Edom, and Midian, that was a son of Abraham from Keturah, that is his second wife after Sarah died. And so many of those people remained in the area, and God used them now and then to afflict his own people. And so when God wants to raise oftentimes an adversary to Israel, he uses one or the relatives. And so this is again what we find here. "Now the Lord raised up an adversary against Solomon, Hadad the Edomite." Now who was this Hadad the Edomite? He was a descendant of the king in Edom. And so we read in verse 15, "For it happened when David was in Edom, and Joab the commander of the army had gone up to bury the slain," that is, they had a battle and war against Edom, "after he had killed every male in Edom." Now mind you, this was a major event in the history of both Judah and Edom. They went to battle, they went to war, Edom lost, and this is what Joab proceeds now to do. He kills every male in Edom. And doesn't even say that he killed only the men of war, but everyone who was a male that could perpetuate an Edomite family was obliterated by Joab. And so we read in verse 16, "Because for 6 months Joab remained there with all Israel until he had cut down every male in Edom." So this is in essence a background to who is this Hadad, the Edomite. So obviously Hadad has an axe to grind, you see, let's put it mildly, against brother Jacob. And this is the very one who already is full of hatred against all of Israel, and in particular, you know, the king. And his son, Solomon, you know, is the son of David, who, in essence, responsible for that. And so this very person is raised by God to be an adversary of Solomon. And that's a part of the story, you know, the constant adversarial relationship between these two. And in essence, well, what you find here is, in modern terminology, is a genocide. All of Israel remained there. They, you know, they captured every Edomite they could find after the battle, and they destroyed them. That is the old men, the men of war, and the children, every male. And so you can imagine what it did to the Edomites, you know, for centuries, so we're not about to forget that. So that perpetual hatred and anger and adversarial relationship that was there on the part of Edom against brother Jacob, you know, had many, many, you know, you might say good reasons. Some good, some bad. But from his point of view, they were all good reasons to hate brother Jacob all the more. And so this is one episode of them. And then we read in verse 17, so when that happened, in other words, in the days of David, in verse 17, Hadad fled to go to Egypt. So he was the son of the king. And he fled. That's how he was able to remain alive. And we read here, and Hadad fled to go to Egypt, and certain Edomites of his father's servants with him. Now Hadad was still a little child. So in other words, the king's family, the king probably himself was destroyed, but the servants of the family, you know, wanted to rescue the son, and so they fled, and so they took the child with them to go to Egypt. And verse 18, we read, then they arose from Midian and came to Paran. Now Midian was more toward the Sinai Desert, toward actually where Jethro was, who was a Midianite, the priest of On, a father-in-law of Moses. And you know who the Midianites are. They are the children of Midian, who was the son of Abraham from Keturah, his second wife. And so these people remained there in that territory. And this is again, you know, where we find these people going. Or they went and arose from Midian and came to Paran. And why would they go to Paran? Because there were Edomites there. And they took men with them from Paran and came to Egypt, to Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. In other words, when Moses talks about Seir and he talks about Paran, he's talking about territories where the people of Edom dwelt. And obviously, in the future, this is not going to be the case, because Edomites basically migrated from there. But some of them, to this very day, are still there in the area. They're on the Gaza Strip, they're among the Palestinians, and they're in other places where nowadays, you know, so-called Palestinians spread all over the Middle East and many other places. And also other Edomites who are not even known as Palestinians because they did not live in that land, but in other lands, so they're known by other names. They're along the Gulf of the Red Sea, they would be known as Saudi Arabians, but they're not Arabians. They're not Saudi Arabians. In other words, in the sense of the Ishmaelites, they're Edomites, who are still there. And if they go to Iraq, they're called Iraqi, but they're Edomites. And if they're in the Shikdoms, you know, they're known by the different Shikdoms, but they're basically Edomites. And all the other places where they went, you know, they have new names, just like the children of Israel. Wherever they went, they've taken new identity, new names, and oftentimes they don't even know who they are. And so it is with Edom. But God knows who they are, and their hatred, generally speaking, testifies to their identity, their hatred toward Jacob, to this very day, wherever Jacob is, and wherever Edom is. And God, who knows who they are, is going to bring on them destruction at the end time. And as we mentioned, in the territory of Midian, there was Jethro, who was a Midianite, but among them there were also Edomites that lived there. Now, Edom spread in many areas, long before even the children of Israel came to the land. They were already found in Iraq, or Babylon at the time, in Saudi Arabia, and many other areas. Now, as time goes on, we find them, I'm speaking specifically about the Middle East, we find them between the New Testaments, as the children of Judah were taken to captivity. The land was empty, so the Edomites moved in. That was their chance to at least take part of all their land. The Amalekites moved in, and they were in the south, in the Negev, which means that they were now closer to the Philistines. And in days of old also, they had links with the Philistines, who were enemies of Israel, because that's the way it works, you know. Your enemies' enemies become your friends. And so they mixed also with the Philistines because they moved into that territory, and from there they also moved up north because they were chased in all directions. And so we find them in the days of the Maccabean era, which was roughly 2 centuries before the days of Jesus Christ. We find the Edomians already a part of the land of Israel. In other words, they lived there for quite a while because they moved in, and apparently the people of Judah were not strong enough to chase them away, you know, just like you find today. Children of Israel are back to in their land, at least some of them, and they don't have, or at least they haven't done it when they could, the power and the wherewithal to get rid of all the Edomites in their land, or all the Amalekites, or the Canaanites, or whatever it may be. And so it was also between the Testaments. The Edomites were just there, and that was it. By then, they've been there for centuries, and so they obviously looked upon it just like they do today. You know, this is my land. And now and then, when the Jews were strong, then they obviously were on top. In the days of the Maccabean from the Hasmonean dynasty, John Hyrcanus, who was also a king and a high priest, he went to battle, he went to war against all the enemies of Israel, and he subjugated the Edomites, and in essence, he gave them an ultimatum: you all either convert, or you're dead. You see? Well, the Edomites did not want to be dead, so they all converted to Judaism. It was a forced conversion. But as time went by, you know, generation after generation, they just were known as Jews. Jews in the sense of religion, you see, but still known by everybody else and obviously themselves as Edomites. And so they maintained that distinction and still continued to live among themselves. And so they were Edomites, but now because of that conversion, and you know how it is, the father is converted, and, you know, and then he teaches the children the same way, and then pretty soon you grow up, and you find yourself in a totally different religion, and then you just continue that way. And so they continued as Jews in the sense of religion, but as Edomites as a distinct identity. And so from that conversion, we see the father of the famous great Herod, Herod the king. He was apparently in that generation. They were forced to be converted. Antipater, I believe his name was. And he was a great man of war, and also a decent man. Just happened to be, you know, a decent man. You know, Edomites, a lot of Edomites are decent people. They're not always evil people. It's just they don't agree with that decision on the part of God to give the land to brother Jacob. But otherwise, an awful lot of Edomites were just as good as the Israelites. They were not worse than them. So we're not talking about on a personal basis, you know, the character of the people. We're talking about that unwillingness on their part to ever submit to the will of God concerning the birthright. So I have to distinguish between one and the other, because now and then we see Edomites who were certainly, in terms of character and morality, much better than the people of Israel. And even to this very day, you see the same, wherever they are. So we have to distinguish, you know, when we talk about Edomites, to realize that there is a difference between the personal life of the Edomites and the morality and the character and whatever else you find in their family life from that rebellion against the will of God in terms of the birthright. And we should not mix one with the other. In other words, people should not get the idea that Edomites are so horrible and evil and wicked and all that. They're not. They're still children of Isaac. And God even commanded Israel to treat them well, And if they want to come and join the Commonwealth of Israel and the nation, they're allowed to come, to be a part of the nation. And so God still made Israel aware of the fact that they are brothers and that they should be treated as brothers. Even though, you know, they reject the will of God in this sense, in this matter of the birthright. But, obviously, when they had fights between them, when they had squabbles, when they had war, well, it was either you or me. That was the issue. And so, in these days of Hyrcanus, you know, Hasmoneans and the Maccabeans, and later on in the days of the Second Temple, right before Jesus Christ, we find now an Edomite family rising to the top. And since the father of Herod was a warrior, and he sided with one of the generals of Rome, and so as a prize, so to speak, you know, for siding with him, he made him a citizen, and so now Antipater becomes a citizen, which means that his family are all citizens of Rome, and they knew how to play politics and be on the right side, and so they were able to rise to the top, to the point where Antipater was actually declared a governor of Judea. And later on, when the new Caesar arose, who was also a friend of the family, he made it possible for Herod, who was also a mighty warrior, and ironically, this family was actually liked by most of the Jews, because they seemed to be even more decent than many of the Maccabean rulers that they had. Yeah, that's the irony of thing. Here it is, brother Jacob being ruled by Edom because Jacob was not behaving himself. And ironically, the rule of Edom was a benevolent one, while many of the Maccabeans at the time were just killing one another and misbehaving themselves, shedding a lot of blood, and they were not as decent as you might expect. And then on the other hand, you find this Edomite family that was even more decent and more noble, to the point that King Herod and the governor, when he was a governor, he was very, very much liked by the people of Jerusalem, the people of Judea. And so it was, you know, generally like that, love-hate relationship, good, bad. It wasn't all bad, it wasn't all good. And so you have to study the history on a particular basis and understand it, not as a generality, because a lot of people are reading a lot of the scriptures here and the destruction that God has in mind for Edom, and they think, well, they're all bad, all evil, all wicked, all corrupt, all immoral, and all that. And that was not the issue. The issue was that they were not willing to accept the will of God concerning the birthright, and therefore that war continued and still does to this very day. You go to the West Bank, you go to the Gaza Strip, you go to among the Palestinians, among the Arabs there, on a personal basis, a lot of them, very decent people, very moral, much more moral than many Israeli, that's for sure, and good-hearted, and hospitable, many good qualities. You see, the issue is not that. The issue is their unwillingness to accept the will of God, that the land belongs and is given and is always the inheritance of Jacob and not of anyone else. You see, not Ishmael, not brother Edom, not anybody else. This is where the issue there. This is where the origin of the conflict is. It's not necessarily the personal character or morality of the person. And so this is where we find that time. King Herod is doing very well, but then gradually, you know, he turns to be an evil king, and he does a lot of evil to the people of Judah. And when Christ is going to appear on the scene, we find Herod is in absolute charge. At that time, was already sickly and with ill intentions. And a lot of, you know, you have to study Josephus about all the details. There's an awful lot of history there. I'm not going to go through that. But just, you know, highlights here and there. And so King Herod, developing that animosity toward the Jews, and you know, that with good cause sometimes, and also intermarried with the Jewish princess or the Maccabean to gain some respectability and nobility and get closer in essence to the Jewish leadership, to show them that he's just one of them, because he married a Jewish princess, Miriam, but then he He killed her, and he killed her children, at least most of them. And then he still had children, other children that were Jewish, in essence, that is, from the Hasmoneans, from the Maccabeans. And so, you know, there was a relationship of good and bad there. And he's the one that wanted to kill Jesus Christ, not because he hated him personally or hated the Jews, but, you know, that was a matter of power, politics. And obviously, God was not going to allow that. And then later on, we read in the New Testament also the attempt of Herod to kill others, that is his son now. And there was an awful lot of violence, you know, between these two factions, Edomites and the family of Edom, the family of Herod, and Jewish leadership. You know, when King Herod died, if you study history, you know, the history of Josephus, he decreed that all the leaders, all the elders of Judah, also should be put to death at the moment of his death, so the people of Judah would not rejoice at the fact that he died. So, you know, in other words, he wanted to give them a reason to mourn also. And so you see, you know, the constant bloodshed and hatred and animosity that was there. And sometimes it was for reasons of war, other times just personal hatred, whichever it may be. This family, unfortunately, it's a family. This is what the issue is all about. This is a family of Isaac, children of Abraham, all squabbling, all hating one another, all abhorring one another, and this is, unfortunately, common to many families. And reality is, a lot of the murders, a lot of the animosities, a lot of the hatred is within the family, and that's in essence what you see here. But family squabbles aside and hatred and all that, this is another reason why God has that hatred, in essence, toward this attitudes of Edom and the destruction that he's going to bring upon him. But because Edom is not willing to acknowledge the will of God, the sovereignty of God, and the rights of God to give the land to whomsoever he wants. And so you see this constant opposition there that spilled into later on opposing religions. And that's how Babylon also figures into the future of Edom. We integrated, at least part of Edom, that integrated with Babylon, the later on into the spiritual Babylon, as we shall see later on. And then also the other religion that he, in essence, championed through a prophet who was basically of an Edomite descent and also mixed with Ishmaelites, obviously, because Edom was also mixed with Ishmaelites since he married the daughter of Ishmael, and then after all his children, obviously, intermarried with many Ishmaelites. So, you know, you see there a link there between the two, but still God uses them as a distinct entity and targets them for destruction at the end time, being the chief enemies of Israel. And not only Israel in the Middle East, but Israel wherever Israel is. And in the book of Acts, we read a little bit more about the animosities that is between Judah and Israel. And you know the story, when King Herod was still in charge at the time, the family of Herod was in charge until the second destruction of the temple. After that, there was no more nation, so obviously there was no more Herodian family to reign. But in the book of Acts, in chapter 12, we read about King Herod, that is the son of King Herod, who is also a Herod. That became sort of a title. We read in verse 1, now about that time, Herod, the king, stretched out his hand to harass some from the church. In other words, the followers of Jesus Christ. And then he killed James, the brother of John, with the sword. Now, why would he want to harass the church? You see, the animosity is constantly there. So not only is after the physical people of Israel, but it's also after the spiritual people of Israel, who, you know, at this time, they're all Jews. You see, the hatred and the animosity there. And he should not have done that, you know, they haven't done him any wrong. So he's shedding innocent blood here, in essence. And so we read the reason why he did it. Verse 3, and because he saw that it pleased the Jews, he proceeded further to seize Peter also. And now it was during the days of unleavened bread. And so he had arrested him and he put him in prison and delivered him to four squads of soldiers to keep him, intending to bring him before the people after Passover. You see, Passover, that was a wrong time to do it because that creates a great commotion and Rome is not going to be very pleased with it, so he's going to do it after Passover. In essence, he wants to kill him too. And so you see that the Edomites are not only after the people of God, the physical people of God, but they are opposing God also when it comes to the spiritual people in whom the Holy Spirit is. And so you see the constant battle there, the constant hatred, the constant animosity that knows no limits. And all that is tied to the very issue, the contempt for the will of God and the birthright. And all those things are mixed together, and obviously as time goes by, other issues enter into the picture. And so he put him in prison, and obviously he was going to destroy him later on. And so we read in verse 22 how God was going to deal with this Herod. In verse 20 we read, "Now Herod had been very angry with the people of Tyre and Sidon." And the people of Tyre and Sidon, many of them were also, as we shall see later on, Edomites. Not all of them, but many of them were Edomites. And but, you know, they were not under the dominion of Herod. So the people of Edom were many nations, and obviously they didn't always get along together. And when you read the history of the kings of Edom in Genesis 36, you notice that they didn't have any dynasty there where a father continues to reign until he dies and then his son succeeds him. But you see a lot of Edomite kings coming from different territories. In other words, they were in essence toppling each other. So bloodshed was even among them against each other, among themselves. And so this Herod is not too happy with the people of Tyre and Sidon, but they came to him with one accord, and having made Blastus, the king's personal aide, their friend, they asked for peace because their country, their territory, was supplied with food by the king's country, you know, who ran over the Galilee, Galilean territory. And so, depending on them, for economic reasons, they wanted to make peace with this Herod. In other words, it's, again, a family squabble even among the Edomites. Of course, a lot of people don't know that the people of Tyre and Sidon, many of those areas are Edomites, but we shall see that later on, and as we go through the historic facts of the whereabouts of the children of Edom as they began to spread to other places. And so on a set day, Herod, arrayed in royal apparel, in verse 21, sat on his throne and gave an oration to them, and the people kept shouting the voice of a god. In other words, as he gave an oration, they said, "This is the voice of a god and not of a man." Then immediately an angel of the Lord struck him, because he did not give glory to God. Now, mind you, King Herod, coming from a family that was converted into Judaism, knew the people of God, knew the laws of God, you see. And in essence, they were just like Jews in religion. So he should have known those things. You see, he was not a pagan at this time. The Edomites who were in the land were not pagans. They were Jews in terms of religion. They were not Jews by identity, in terms of their own nation. You know, in other words, they were not descendants of Jacob, but of Esau, his twin brother. But they were Jews by religion. And so he should have given glory to God. And immediately the angel of the Lord struck him because he did not give glory to God, and he was eaten by worms and died, but the word of God grew and multiplied. In other words, here again you see a part of the whole conflict, where now and then God punishes Edom. And this is just one way of doing it. And you see again, you know, the animosity there between the two. This animosity continues to this very day, unfortunately. And it's going to have one last, final, dark chapter that is still coming ahead of us. And Jacob is going to be paying the price again because of the bloodshed that is coming. And obviously, the only time that God allows Jacob to be punished is because of his iniquities and sins, not because of his righteousness. But on the other hand, you know, God is going to deliver Jacob, while Edom, as we read in many prophecies, that is the part of Edom that is involved in bringing the evil and the punishment and, you know, executing vengeance on his brother Jacob. that part of Edom is going to be decimated. The details we are going to find out in the future. And so during this period of time, in the days of the Second Temple, where the Edomites, that is, speaking about the Edomites, obviously they were there, not the Edomites that were in other countries. As a matter of fact, the majority of the Edomites were not even there. So what is happening between Brother Jacob in this particular time, in the Second Temple era, that's localized, and that involves only a part of Edom. And yet we know from history that in other places there were other conflicts, again between Israel and Edom, and this is speaking about the people of Israel that were not in the land but in other countries. And obviously history has recorded many of these events, and when we get to the historic part of Edom, the whereabouts of Edom, in conjunction with the children of Israel, we're going to cover this part. Well, anyway, here, back here at the Second Temple era, the details that we have here are basically recorded in the writings of Josephus. Obviously, an awful lot of writings were destroyed as time went by, and we have few sources left of that time in terms of the details of things that happened, but Josephus records in detail many of the things that were happening during that destruction of the temple, because he was around at the time fighting the Romans, and then after that joining the Romans. Not that he fought with them against his own people, but he just gave up the fight against them, and instead of that he became sort of a historian and was on the side of Rome in that sense, and for that reason the Jews don't like him. They hold him as a traitor, and so they don't care much about his writings to one degree. That is, those who are aware of what he did, betraying his own nation and people. But on the other hand, you know, those who just look at the historic record that he left behind have an appreciation for that. And so he's recording a lot of the things that were happening between the people of Israel, that is, the people of Jacob, the people of Judah, and Brother Edom, and a lot of things, you know, that were just very bloody. Ironically, sometimes, you know, there were good things that Edom was doing while Jacob was not doing as well, that is Judah. And on the other hand, toward the end, there was an awful lot of bloodshed again. So those kind of things erupt now and then. Sometimes they have peace, other times, because of whatever issues, Brother Edom again sheds the blood, and oftentimes innocent blood of Jacob. And whenever Jacob can, you know, he retaliates, just like the prophecy that Isaac, in essence, and the blessing that he gave to both. The mere fact that Jacob is going to be on top and Edom would serve him, in human terms, obviously, that includes bloodshed and war and subjugation and oppression, and that's the way it worked. And that's the way it is to this very day. Presently, the Jews are subjugating the Palestinians, in essence. They have them under their dominion to one degree. And when the Palestinians can, either through terrorism or other acts, you know, they try to be on top, and then God is going to allow them to have, in essence, a greater measure of success and victory, not only over Judah, but also in other parts of the Middle East. Not only the known Palestinians, but also the Edomites, who are not known as Edomites, like in Iraq and other places. They're going to have the dominion for a short time until God steps into the action and brings destruction on Edom. And so in the days of the Second Temple, Josephus tells us, and he can read it in his writings about the antiquities, you know, or either the Jewish wars or the antiquities of the Jews. There's an awful lot of information there, and we cannot necessarily quote everything there. But in general, if you look into that period of time, Josephus tells us that there was an awful lot of bloodshed that was inflicted upon Jacob by Esau, and also the other way around in other occasions. One occasion, he said that one of the zealots, there were several of them that were leaders, and unfortunately many of them were not necessarily God-fearing people. They were just doing their own thing. But in essence, this man took vengeance on Edom, again, because of the constant back-and-forth fighting. And he just basically went to the land of Edom and destroyed it, and also made his men bring an awful lot of salt, and he literally salted the whole land of Edom. That is a part of Edom that was in the south, to make it totally uninhabitable. And so you can see why that hatred that will be in the heart of the Edomites. Of course, from their point of view, they see it only on a human basis, and that adds up to the load, so to speak, of hatred that is in their heart against the people of Judah. In that case, since they are the ones that dealt with, but in essence, Judah, Jacob, Israel, it's all the same, and that's an Esau-Jacob conflict. And sometimes, they're fighting with this tribe of Israel, other times with other tribes of Israel, depending on whose borders they are. And at the end of time of the temple, when the temple was about to be destroyed, Josephus gives us a very detailed description of what was happening there. The people of Edom heard a false rumor, and there was, unfortunately, a division among the priests and division among the people in Jerusalem as to the control of the temple, and Jews were fighting Jews. As a matter of fact, there was a reign of terror that was going on there in Jerusalem toward the end of it, and the ones responsible for it were Jews who were terrorizing their fellow men. Literally, it was a hell on earth. That's the way it was described by Josephus. And so the Edomites stepped in, and the gates were closed. They finally managed to go in, because some of the Jews sided with them, and they allowed them in, and so they went into the temple, and Josephus describes that in detail. And they literally massacred everybody that they could, the priests, old and young, and the defenders of the temple. They had no mercy, they had no compassion, and of course all that was based on a false rumor, but they did it anyway, and finally they were convinced that that was an error. But by then they've done their, in other words, they fulfilled their desire by taking vengeance on brother Jacob. And it's very interesting, this event that happened here, because historically, that is biblically, we have an account where the same thing happened also, and showing you the attitude of Edom, that he just loves blood. He loves to shed blood. He loves vengeance. And when he pours his fury, he has absolutely no mercy, as several of the prophecies about Edom describe. We have an example of that, about the slaying of the priests, and that's exactly what Edom was doing here in the temple. He destroyed many, many, many priests that were in the temple, and Levites and defenders that were with them, and just butchered them without mercy, even though many pleaded for mercy and tried to convince them that the rumor they heard was not true. They were not willing to listen, and they just let it out. And that's the nature of Edom. That's why God says, because you love blood, therefore I'm going to feed you with blood. So as he has generally speaking, total vengeance without mercy on Judah, and for that matter on others, that's the kind of a man he was, a man that lives by the sword, and he loved it, God says he's going to dish out, the same kind of bitter taste of medicine, to him, and he's going to pour his fury upon him without mercy and with absolute vengeance. And that's what you read there in, for example, Isaiah 63. It says that his sword is going to be bathed in heaven. God is going to come with fury and vengeance, and he's going to pour it without mercy on Edom until it decimates Edom, and only very few of them will be left behind, mainly widows and orphans and some elderly people. And so we have an example here of the total disrespect on the part of Edom toward the priest of God. You remember the case when David was fleeing from Saul, and he went to the priest in Nob, and the priest helped him, Ahimelech, that was the name of the priest, not knowing that he was fleeing from Saul, and he asked him for bread, and he asked him for the sword of Goliath, and that's what he gave him. And while that was happening, of all things, Doeg, the Edomite, was in charge of the cattle of King Saul. And as we read here in verse 9, then Doeg was there, and he noticed what was happening between David and the priest, and therefore later on, when Saul asked about this very matter, nobody knew what was happening, But Doeg stepped in and let him know exactly what happened because of what he had witnessed earlier. And so Saul was on the path of vengeance, and he called Ahimelech. And we read here in 1 Samuel chapter 22 and verse 16. The king said to Ahimelech, "You shall surely die, you and all your father's house." In other words, the king was not willing to listen to the explanation of Ahimelech, but he knew absolutely nothing about King David fleeing from Saul. He thought he was a servant. Everybody knew that he was a servant, and he thought he was there on a mission. And yet Saul was not willing to listen to any of that explanation. He just held it against him. And so we read in verse 17, "Then the king said to the guards who stood about him, 'Turn and kill the priests of the Lord.'" Now this is exactly the very spirit that was in the people of Edom oftentimes when they were on the warpath against brother Jacob. Anyway, we're going to stop at this point. Continue next time. This is again Mordecai Joseph saying greetings to all of God's people. Until next time.